We're calling the Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee to order. Winner, would you please take the roll?
Chair Geddes?
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo?
Here.
Regent Arascata?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent McMichael? Regent Perkins? You have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll go to item number one, public comment. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, is there any public comment in Reno?
There is none in Reno.
Hearing none, is there any public comment here in Elko? Seeing none, do we have we have the online submitted, and those will be part of the record, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. So we'll go to item number two, the minutes for possible action. Could I get motion of approval? Motion from Regent Del Carlo, second from?
Second.
Regent Arascata. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to item number three, UNLV Organizational Unit Proposal, Cannabis Policy Institute. President Whitfield? Nope. Sorry, Provost Heavey. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chris Heavey, Executive Vice President and Provost, for the record. Thank you, Chair Geddes and Vice Chair McAdoo and Regents. We're delighted to be before you today asking for approval of the Cannabis Policy Institute at UNLV. This will be an interdisciplinary institute that will basically be focused on developing policy to support the growing cannabis industry in Las Vegas and the state of Nevada. As people know, cannabis has been legalized both for medical and recreational use in Nevada now, and it's a burgeoning industry that is in need of support from our institutions of higher education to develop appropriate policy, especially given that it remains illegal at the federal level. And so as the vision of President Whitfield is laid out of UNLV as an institution that's designed to support our community, we think this is a great opportunity to bring together the resources of UNLV, the law school, the business school, and some of our departments to help develop and guide policy and eventually develop curriculum as well to support the cannabis industry. We'll also say that this will be an interdisciplinary institute, but it will function completely independently of all other institutes and departments at UNLV and will report directly to President Whitfield. I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone might have about this institute.
Thank you. And Provost TV, as we've discussed on several occasions, I just want to make sure, and it sounds like the institute reporting to President Whitfield puts in the firewalls, but I was concerned that in the development, one of the owners of a cannabis facility was part of the development of the institute, and I wanted to make sure that legally UNLV had put in that firewall. It sounds like putting the reporting line directly to President Whitfield, that is the firewall.
Yes, we definitely are committed to this being an independent institute. And in the development of the proposal, there were no actual industry involvement. It was some of the other policy institutes on the campus and their policy experts, but no one who was actually directly involved in the cannabis industry was involved in the development of the proposal.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Regent Arascata.
Question. Provost Heavey, should today's proposal pass ARSA, can this board receive at least a commitment that either the Brooking Mountains West, UNLV, and the Cannabis Policy Institute initiate communications with the DEA for some of the documented medical benefits of cannabis?
Yes. We actually do have some researchers on the campus who have at least one who has the necessary certifications to do cannabis research. The focus of the Institute will be on policy to support that research. And so we don't expect the Institute to be directly involved in doing the research, but in definitely communicating with the DEA and others about how to support those who are doing that important work.
As you stated earlier, cannabis still not approved under FDA and federally. Would this approval under ARSA jeopardize any federal grants?
No. We understand the limitations of the institution in terms of being what are the sort of guide rails or things that we should not get involved in, and essentially we need to be clear in complying with all federal regulations that we are not in a position to support the use of cannabis directly, and we will not be sort of proponents. We'll be neutral arbiters of policy related to the use of cannabis as it unfolds according to the laws of the state of Nevada.
Okay. Just from research, it seems that Mississippi State is currently the only campus with the licensure from the DEA for actual research of medicinal benefits. Is that something that UNLV will branch into or is interested in?
Yeah, my understanding is that Mississippi State is the only institution that is allowed to produce cannabis that can be used in research, but that cannabis can be transferred to other institutions to conduct that research under a strict set of protocols developed by the DEA, and that's why I did, you know, we do have one researcher at UNLV who has that approval, and so we may be involved in some of that research, but that would be independent of this Cannabis Policy Institute.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I just want to say I think it's really smart and foresightful of UNLV to do this. I mean, it's the largest city, of course, in our state. It's the entertainment capital of the world, soon to be the sports capital of the world. People come to Las Vegas to have a good time, and it's legal. We might as well get our arms around it and research it and control it and all the things that needs to be done and be the model for the rest of the country, really. You have a prime opportunity here, so I think this is really a good thing.
Thank you.
No problem supporting it.
Was that a motion for approval?
That was a motion for approval.
Thank you.
And I'll second that motion.
And I've got a second. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. We will go to item four, the organizational unit proposal, Nevada Center for Astrophysics. And since you're still at the podium, Provost Stevie, I'm assuming that's you.
Yes, thank you. Chris Heavey, Executive Vice President and Provost of UNLV for the record. We're happy to be before you today, again, asking for approval for the Nevada Center for Astrophysics. This center will bring together existing researchers at UNLV and across the nation and world to try to advance a really exciting new area of research focused on multi-messenger astrophysics. And as the president often asks me, what's the strongest department at UNLV? And it's probably our Department of Physics and Astrophysics, because we have collected an incredible number of world-famous researchers in this new area, and it's considered the new frontier in astrophysics, including one of the world's most prominent scientists in this area, a faculty member named Bing Zhang. And they will essentially work to, apply for grants and hire postdocs to make UNLV continue to be on the leading edge of this new area of research. So we're requesting your approval for this new center.
Thank you. And as I mentioned to you and President Whitfield, I did not like the PhD program in astronomy that was developed, and then we had to kill it because nobody showed up. But I think this program has great potential with the faculty that you do have, and I'm fully supportive of it. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, is there a motion? Motion from Regent Del Carlo, second from Regent McAdoo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number five, UNLV program approval, MS athletic training. Provost Heavey.
All right, thank you. Chris Heavey, Executive Vice President and Provost, for the record. This is an area of great need to produce athletic trainers, and this is one of the areas where they have switched to having accreditation at the bachelor's degree to now only accrediting programs in the future at the master's degree. We currently have an accredited bachelor's program in athletic training that's been very successful and produced athletic trainers that work across a wide array of areas, including even now things like Amazon Warehouse, obviously sports programs, high school, professional, all levels, Cirque du Soleil, and other areas that need athletic trainers for their employees. And so we're basically just asking to create the parallel program now at the master's level starting in 2025 that will be able to achieve the accreditation that's needed for people to seek employment in this area. Essentially, it's the very parallel curriculum, same faculty, won't require many additional resources. And you've already approved the teach-out plan for the bachelor's degree in athletic training. And so this would just take its place in a seamless fashion so students will continue to have the opportunity to pursue this training.
Any questions or comments? Seeing none, a motion?
I so move.
From Regent McAdoo, second from Regent Del Carlo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
You can sit down now, Chris. Nevada State College, Program of Proposal, EDS, School Psychology, President Pollard.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone. I am delighted to be here. I would love to invite Provost Vicki Shields, who will present this action for the committee today. Thank you.
Thank you. Provost Shields.
Good morning, Chair McAdoo, Chancellor Urquiaga, Regents and Presidents. For the record, Dr. Vicki Shields, Provost and Executive Vice President, Nevada State. Today, I'm seeking your approval for the Educational Specialist Degree in School Psychology. Superintendent Jara of the Clark County School District has endorsed this proposal by providing one-year funding for the hire of our first full-time faculty member in the program. This hire has been made, and we are currently advertising for a second. Further, the Nevada Department of Education is the recipient of a five-year, $10 million U.S. Department of Education School-Based Mental Health Providers Grant. Nevada State's School of Education is a sub-awardee, allocated approximately $700,000 over 5 years to support the development of career pathways in school-based mental health, ultimately leading to this proposal for a graduate program in school psychology. The program is slated to admit our first cohort of students in as early as January 2024 and no later than fall 2024. Nevada consistently ranks at the bottom for access to mental health services. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the Children's Hospital Association declared a state of emergency in children's mental health in October of 2021. And in a recent report, increasing the number of school psychologists was cited as the top solution to address this crisis. In the Western region, there is a particular challenge to meeting the demand for more school psychologists. A lack of graduate education training programs has been identified as a contributing factor to the poor ratios found in the Western states. With only one graduate program housed in the state at UNLV, Nevada is not able to meet the needs of our ever-expanding population. The National Association of School Psychologists recommends a school psychologist to student ratio of 1 to 500. In Nevada, the ratio is 1 to 2200. Nevada is short at least 740 school psychologists to meet the recommended ratios of psychologists to students. Across Nevada, 78% of students do not have access to the comprehensive services that school psychologists offer. This lack of proactive psychoeducational support carries significant long-term consequences for students, such as higher dropout rates, increased number of students in school-to-prison pipeline, decreased economic returns, and higher suicide rates, as noted in communities without access to early school-based mental health services and supports. We are seeking to add an accredited education specialist in school psychology to address state and national shortages. The program will provide graduate-level training as outlined by the National Association of School Psychologists, NASP. Graduates will be prepared to serve as school psychologists in all education settings and under the clinical supervision in community-based settings. In addition, they will be prepared to successfully pass the national examination required for certification and will have met the criteria for licensure by the Nevada Department of Education. The program dovetails with our overall artery framework, which is designed to provide multiple access points to a career in school-based mental health professional. From an introduction in dual credit courses to the recently approved minor in school-based mental health to our bachelor's degrees in education and ultimately the proposed EDS program. The varied opportunities to explore school psychology at different educational levels are aimed at improving access and fostering interest among students from all backgrounds. We hope these opportunities help students more readily understand the work of a school psychologist and facilitate their likelihood for entering the EDS in school psychology program. I'd be happy to entertain any questions or comments.
I have a motion for approval from Regent McAdoo. Do I have a second? Second from Regent Del Carlo. Regent McAdoo, comment?
Thank you. I wanted to make that motion. Having gotten to serve as the regent on the K through 12 state school board the last 3 years, I've heard the need for this over and over and over. And then, of course, in our higher education system, we've talked so many times about the need for mental health and school psychologists. So it is my great honor to make that motion and to support it with everything in me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo.
Thank you, Chancellor Urquiagua.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for recognizing me. For the record, Dale Urquiagua, Acting Chancellor. I just wanted to say thank you to the President and the Provost for this proposal and this conversation. I think everyone in this room knows that I served as the state superintendent, and I cannot count the number of suicides that occurred when I was in that job. The bullying hearings that we sponsored legislation for were some of the most emotional hearings I have ever heard, and the darkest day in my professional career, which is quite long, was the day of a school shooting in Sparks. So I don't often get to say thank you in this job, so I just want to say thank you. There is no more important work, I think, on the agenda in these 2 days than this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. I, too, want to applaud you for putting this program together. I was proud to make the second because this is a huge problem in our state. I mean, when we're at the bottom of the list, and I also serve on the Nevada Advisory Committee to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and we did a long study on what was going on during the pandemic, and this was like at the top of the list, and our figures were, I think, 2,500. 1 to 2,500 is what we really have. It, mm-hmm. The briefing paper said 2,200, so if we've improved some, that's good, but we got a long ways to go. So yeah. Our children are really suffering. I heard that the truancy rate was 40% in Clark County, like the first week of school, and these kids are really suffering, and we've got to all come together as a community and help these kids. So, and let's hope and pray we never have another school shooting. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you.
Nevada State College.
Regent Arascata.
Once again, thank you. One of the items that was most impressive to me was on page 16 of the attached paperwork is the readiness to begin the program. You're ready.
We're ready.
Let's get this going. Full approval. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Item number 7, Great Basin College Program Proposal for AAS and Cardiorespiratory Care Science. President Helens.
Vice President Rivera will present our item.
Good morning and welcome to ELCO. For the record, Jake Rivera, Vice President for Student and Academic Affairs. Thank you, Chair Geddes, Chair McAdoo, Chancellor, and Regents. GBC is requesting approval from the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education for the Associates of Applied Science Cardiorespiratory Care Science degree. GBC's AAS Cardiorespiratory Care Science program addresses the NCHE Master Plan goal by increasing the percentage of Nevada's general population by providing additional workforce opportunities. Working closely with the healthcare industry, this new degree will provide Nevadans with a new career option. Employment for respiratory therapists is projected to grow 23% from 2020 to 2030, much faster than the average for all occupations. The program will provide vast knowledge of caring for patients who have respiratory issues. As we've all seen with the impact of COVID, the COVID pandemic, the need for healthcare workers that specialize in cardiorespiratory science has never been greater. These graduates will impact the healthcare system, not only enriching their lives as a cardiorespiratory care therapist, but will also impact areas in rural Nevada that are significant disadvantage for professionals in this field. Just a few additional facts. To qualify to sit for the registered respiratory therapist credentials, you have to complete an associate's degree. The credential is a certified respiratory therapist, and students have to sit for a national board before they can be licensed. We also plan to seek full accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation for Respiratory Care for this program, which requires at least an associate's degree. There are very successful associate degree programs that the RT program is a good fit with, and it would be an easier transition for students who want to enter the workforce at a faster pace, which impacts medical facilities that desperately need RTs. Finally, last fact, average salary in Nevada, $74,000. We have federal funding as well as grant funding supporting four sections of RT and an instructor salary. We are putting one section at each of the following locations, ELCO, Pahrump, Winnemucca, and one at Renown in Reno. We have partnered with Renown as we would be the only respiratory therapy program in the north. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Just out of curiosity, I don't know if you can answer, but do you know how many respiratory care centers are in the GBC footprint?
I do not, but Dean Amber Dinelli should be able to answer that for you.
Sorry for making you come all the way up.
Good morning. For the record, Dr. Amber Dinelli, Dean of Health Science and Human Services for Great Basin College. Respiratory therapists are in hospital facilities, they're also in clinics. So across our rural capacity, we probably have, there's 14 rural hospitals. And then with each additional clinic, you're probably looking at over 30 facilities.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Motion for approval?
Motion for approval.
Motion from Regent Arriscada, second from Regent Del Carlo. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Passes unanimously. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We will now go to item number 8, handbook revision requirements for graduation. God, your title's too long, Renee. And Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges, Renee Davis.
Good morning, Renee Davis. I can't even say my title. Interim Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges. Today, I bring for your consideration a policy revision to Title IV, Chapter 16, Sections 16, 24, and 36. And I'm going to give you a summary kind of in the totality of the purpose of this revision, and then if you want me to go through any specifics, I'm certainly happy to do that. So essentially, these revisions do two things. First of all, it adds to board policy a provision requiring candidates for a bachelor's degree to complete at least 30 upper division credits in residence. And by in residence, that means at the institution granting the degree. Of course, that's already practiced. That's outlined in the university catalogs. It's longstanding, but it was omitted from policy. There are similar provisions already in existence for NSC and the community colleges. So we updated that. And while we're doing that, we also updated the community college section to recognize separate in-residence requirements for the associate and for the bachelor's degrees that they grant at those institutions. The second thing that it does is it prohibits institutions from limiting the number of credits transferred in based on institution type. So this is basically, as things stand right now, based on institutional policy at NSC and the universities, a student from a community college can transfer in up to 60 credits. Anything beyond that, it's not transferred in. And then if a student transfers from, say, Nevada State College to university, they could bring in up to 90. Now, the provision just simply says you can't have a limit based on institution type, but there's no impact on the existing practices by campuses to make that determination what applies to a degree. So we're not getting into that territory. We're just saying, based simply on institution type, there can't be a limit. So that really sums up what these revisions are doing, and we had to go into three separate sections just to make sure everything was appropriately addressed.
Thank you. Any questions or comments or a motion? Motion from Regent Perkins. Second from Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We will now go to item number 9, the 2020-21 NSCE Financial Aid Report. Jose, that's you.
Thank you, Jose Quiroga, for the record, research analyst, Department of Academic and Student Affairs. Thank you to the chair and to the committee for the opportunity to talk about this important subject. Today, I'll be giving the highlights of the 2020-21 NSCE Financial Aid Report, and attaching the materials is the full report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Excuse me while I work with the clicker here. I do want to start with this slide because it's important to note that not only does financial aid is it an important part of the student's educational career, but it supports and it's one of the cornerstones of three of the board's strategic goals, including increasing participation in post-secondary education, increasing student success, and helping to close that achievement gap of underserved student populations. We also report on financial aid because we believe no student should be denied a college education due to financial barriers, because it fulfills board requirements of reporting, and because it gives us the opportunity to have a discussion of how the national landscape of financial aid is impacting our students within the system. In slide four, we do see a summary of all total financial aid disbursed at NSHE institutions during the past 5 years. Here we see that totaled $650.3 million during the 2020-21 aid year. It's important to note that is the first full year where the pandemic affected enrollment, and so we see that slight dip in financial aid compared to the previous year of about 0.3% decrease between 2019-20 to 2020-21. However, over 5 years, we see that total financial aid had increased a little over 10% during that time frame. And in the next slides, I will be going through how this breaks down. In this slide, we see that total aid again, but by institution. We see that during that 1 year change, most institutions saw that decrease as they saw an enrollment decrease overall, except for two institutions, UNLV and NSC, did see an increase in aid. Over 5 years, it is a more mixed bag of some institutions saw decreases, some institutions saw increases.
Your mom, your dad, your wife.
And that was, we did see that also correlating with enrollment over that time frame, not for all, but for many of the institutions. As we break down that further by race and ethnicity, we can see that in this table that we've presented every year, we added last year the bottom two rows, where we add up the historically minoritized recipient population and we compare it to that population at the institution. For most institutions, that is either close, the percentage of recipients is either close to or exceeds the overall student population of historically minoritized student population. And we've circled where those populations are receiving the most aid at each institution. So that is an important part for institutions to be able to review, and we know they do so at each financial aid institution to make sure that we're serving all of our students. Now as we look at some of the major types of aid, the Pell Grant is the major need-based grant that our students receive. That has increased year to year over the last 5 years, that average amount that students receive. The maximum Pell Grant for the year was $6,345. That will never equal the average amount because it is based on the student's financial need, which varies as measured by the expected family contribution. I'll go over a little bit of these terms a little bit later on, but also by their enrollment level. So a student would never be able to receive that maximum amount if what's right for them is, let's say, a 3-credit or 6-credit load during a semester. We do see both system-wide and nationwide a decrease in Pell Grant recipients between 2019-20 and 2020-21, partly tied to enrollment drop during that year. And then as we go on to student loans are the major type of financial aid, or the largest type of financial aid that students receive, again, both system-wide and nationwide. These disbursements had held steady since 2016-17, and then we see that drop in the last year of 2020-2021. It is the largest drop that we saw between all types of aid. If we are seeing a dropping aid, this is, I would say, the best place to see it in, both because of the work that our institutions are doing to work with students to decrease their borrowing and make sure that they're only borrowing what they need, but also tied to that enrollment drop, effects of the pandemic, students who are staying home more, all of those kind of factors. And as I mentioned, we did see that decrease nationwide. Actually, for the last 10 consecutive years, there's been a drop in student borrowing, as all institutions are really working to decrease that, especially if we hold it by inflation-adjusted dollars. And then I like this slide as well because it shows us a breakdown of statewide financial aid programs. And these are ones that our students are receiving from the Governor Gwynne Millennium Scholarship, being the major statewide merit-based scholarship that students receive. Nevada Grants and Aid, which are a multitude of programs from athletic to graduate grants and aid that have funding attached to them. And the Nevada Promise Scholarship is one of the more recent statewide scholarships that have been adopted by our institutions. And then the Region's Higher Education Opportunity Award. I do want to highlight that one because it is the largest of the statewide programs. And it is a mixture of state and dollars and fee-generated dollars by our institutions. The board did put in a policy where a percentage of registration fees that increased until it reached 10% at community colleges and 15% at other institutions in 2022-23, a percentage of the registration fees were set aside for access grants under this program. And that's altogether totaled $65.4 million, of which 86.4% of that amount are fee-generated. So our largest program is fee-generated from our students to create access dollars in financial aid. Next, the Region Service Program. That's a work-study program where students are able to work in certain high-need fields in the state and receive wages from that. And finally, the Silver State Opportunity Grant, being the only need-based statewide program in Nevada.
And Jose, we've got to change that name, the Region's Higher Education Opportunity Award.
It is a mouthful. One thing is that it is awarded as several different programs to students, but it is a long name. I do want to step back and talk a little bit about financial aid basics. This is a bit of a refresher, but it's an important these are important concepts to talk about as we talk about financial aid. And as I go over the next slides, I'll be talking about the category, source, type. Those all sound like the same thing, but they're slightly different, and it's important to distinguish them, as well as the cost of attendance. And I'll go over a bit about the free application for federal student aid, which for most students is their first step into applying for financial aid. So first, as we go over categories of financial aid, these include grants, scholarships, loans, and work study. Grants are generally need-based, so they require the student to have some type of financial need, usually measured by the FAFSA. However, we do see between grants and scholarships a bit of some similarities in that some grants, although they're mainly financial need, they might require a portion of what we call non-need or merit, maybe a essay or some type of application. For scholarships, these are mainly merit-based. We all know scholarships. They might require a GPA or an essay or some type of merit requirement. But some nowadays tend to require some financial need as well. Loans usually have to be fully paid back after graduation or after leaving school. I do have here that there are some limited opportunities for loan forgiveness. We've all heard there are there might be some coming up loan forgiveness for federal student loans as well. But usually loans do have to be fully repaid. And then there is work study, as it sounds like it's an opportunity for students to work, earn wages while they're in school, sometimes tied to their major, sometimes not. Now, as we see that breakdown by category, as I mentioned previously, the largest category is loans. It is both at NC and nationwide. However, something encouraging is that we see that percentage of the total aid being loans decreasing over the last 5 years from about 46.4% to 40.6%. And that is through a slight drop in that category and through growth in some of the other categories. Then we go to sources of financial aid. We have federal, state, institutional, or private. On the federal side, those Pell Grants and federal student loans are the major categories of aid or types of aid within that category or source. For the state, we went over that chart that had our major programs. And then for the institutional category, so aid from the institutions themselves, that major area is the region's Higher Education Opportunity Award, RHEOA, and various scholarships, grants, and loans that our institutions provide our students. And finally, from the private sector, we have many sources of aid, including scholarships, grants, and loans. System-wide, the federal government is the major source of aid. That is true nationwide. We've hovered around a similar percentage as nationally. Nationally, for the year, it was about 57% of federal aid provided to all students. And that percentage of federal aid has decreased over time as our state, institutional, and private aid have increased. And then as we look at the types of aid, there are two major ones, financial need-based and non-need-based. For the need-based applications, some application or tool is usually necessary. For the most part, that is the FAFSA. So that is how we assess a student's financial need. And they include grants, loans, work, study, and scholarships. Then there is non-need that sometimes requires, might or might not require an application. The same categories, but they're reordered because whereas in financial need, the highest categories are grants and loans, in non-need aid, the highest category is scholarships. Now, as we see that breakdown of need and non-need aid, we do see that the percentage of need-based aid has decreased over time. Over the last 10 years, we have more non-need based aid. Due to several factors, one of them is we see a continuous growth in Millennium Scholarship, which is non-need aid. And as I previously noted, the Pell Grant, which is our major need-based aid, has slightly decreased over time. And one more thing I'll note is that statewide, our only current need-based aid program is the Silver State Opportunity Grant, which has a cap in the dollars, as opposed to the Millennium Scholarship, which has continued to increase because it does not have a cap in the total dollars students can receive. And I would like to also talk a little bit about the cost of attendance and how that is created. We call that sometimes a student budget. It is the maximum amount of aid that a student can receive throughout the year. It is generated by the institutions within certain sections that I'll go over in a moment, including tuitions and fees, books and supplies, room and board, transportation, and the other miscellaneous personal expenses. The cost of attendance differs students by student based on their status, housing status, as well as enrollment level. And the cost of attendance is used in awarding almost all aid as part of that calculation of financial need. Especially for the Silver State Opportunity Grant, the cost of attendance is used as part of a shared responsibility model where we take the cost of attendance minus the expected family contribution from the FAFSA minus a shared responsibility dollar amount and that gets us to what a student can receive as part of that award. So as we look at cost of attendances across institutions, I have in the following slides other ones that I'll glance over a little bit, but I'll spend a little more time on this one just to show how that breaks down in that there's a total cost of attendance broken down by each of those elements I previously mentioned. These differ by institutions. Institutions spend a lot of time surveying students to create that that amount. And it, as I did say, it does differ based on enrollment, housing, and other factors. The previous one, the previous slide was for off-campus students, and I have one as well for with parents and on campus. Now, the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, we've all heard the term, always important to talk about because it is the major financial aid application to establish financial need. It is an annual application. It opens October 1st. I say that whenever I can because a long time ago it was a different date, and some students still have, or parents, especially parents, tend to have that older date in their mind still. It is required for all federal financial aid. But it is also used by Nevada institutions to award most other need-based aid. And it is a tool to determine need. It comes out with an expected family contribution. That's an index. It's not what students are expected to pay, but just an index number that is used to measure financial need. And there are upcoming changes to the FAFSA. That term, EFC, that we're all used to, is going to change to student aid index. And Interim Vice Chancellor Davis did go over a presentation in June 2021 of those upcoming changes in the next couple of years. Now, as I said, the FAFSA is used to determine need. It's part of the federal methodology coming out with the EFC, or Expected Family Contribution. The way that we calculate student financial need is that we take that cost of attendance I talked about, minus the expected family contribution from the FAFSA, and that equals our student need. Then from that, we subtract the total aid received, and that leaves us with the remaining student need. We did, as we look at that for the 2020-21 year and look at our students, that leaves us with about $450 million of remaining student need across the system. That's a large amount, so there's still work to be done to find sources of aid for our students to try to meet that financial need. And then there are some tools students can use. There's a net price calculator that all institutions have. Students receive a student offer letter after filling out the FAFSA or whenever receiving aid from our institutions that has a breakdown of how students, the eligibility for each award they received, and a lot more information. I do have a kind of a sample financial aid offer. I did promise my financial aid colleagues this is not what a financial aid letter looks like. There's a lot more information on it, but I just wanted to be able to fit it all in one slide. But I did want to go over what a financial aid package might look like for a student. And I have one from UN, what it might look like for, let's say, a UNLV student that was off campus, dependent, first year, and enrolled in 15 credits. So on the left side, we have a student whose cost of attendance is $27,430 at UNLV for that 2020-21 academic year. Again, that is not what they pay. That is kind of their overall student budget. If this student's expected family contribution was $17,000, they would not be eligible for, let's say, the Pell Grant, but they could potentially be eligible for some need-based aid. Now, this student, they got really good grades in high school. They got the Governor Gwynne Millennium Scholarship, received an internal scholarship and an external scholarship. So when we subtract all that, they have a remaining need of $530. So this student could receive a subsidized loan for $530 and then potentially an unsubsidized loan of $4,970 if they still needed it. That unsubsidized loan is non-need-based. And that would all fit under the cost of attendance. Now let's compare that to a hypothetical student at Western Nevada College for that year whose cost of attendance was $22,936 with a zero EFC, so very high financial need. This student would then be fully eligible for the maximum Pell Grant, for a federal supplemental educational opportunity grant potentially, and then for the Silver State Opportunity Grant, and if, again, with high grades and meeting all criteria, they would be eligible for the Governor Wood Millennium Scholarship. But even with all of that, those aid amounts, they would still have a financial need remaining of $8,801. How a student could help meet that would be through federal student loan would be one avenue, federal student loans. Because they have higher remaining need, they would be eligible for a higher portion of subsidized loans where the government is paying for the interest while the student is in school. But even maxing that out, the student would still have remaining unmet need. And that is what many of our institutions are working on, how we can help these students meet their cost of attendance. And finally, I did want to include that during the 2020-21 academic year, there was the one-time, well, technically at that point, two-time funds from the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund. We didn't include it in our other slides because of the one-time nature of these funds. We didn't want to, as we look at five-year comparisons, we don't want to inflate them through one-time funds. But our students did receive these in grants through all institutions, and they were not counted as part of the cost of attendance. So that was something that was really good and timely for our students during a year of high need. With that, I'll conclude my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions the chair of the committee may have.
And Jose, this is one of my favorite reports, one of a couple, but and really, it's a more of a comment to the chancellor. Is I'm still comparing the SSOG to the promise. And if you look at the financial breakdown that we got in the community college committee, you know, the promise is a last dollar program, and it goes to people who have a lot more money, whereas SSOG is need-based, and we need to push to expand that need-based program. I was going to say the GWIN money has gone down every year, and the legislature has subsidized it, but the SSOG just needs to grow and expand for the need-based students, and that's the comment for you. So, yes, Chancellor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Quiroga for this presentation. He has had the unenviable task of teaching me about this. I went to college on a Knights of Columbus scholarship a very long time ago, and so this has been very helpful to me. And I appreciate the chair's comment. I just want to share a few remarks with the committee. This is, you will find that this is sort of my way of working. So my intent here to you is to signal what's coming in the conversation. Jose and Renee and Crystal have worked with me over these last weeks. There recently was a study done by the GWIN Center, in full disclosure, you all know I used to work there. The study was commissioned by the last legislative session through the Treasurer's Office to look at the efficacy of the GWIN Millennium Scholarship, the Nevada Promise Scholarship, and the Silver State Opportunity Grant. And I would commend that to you as reading for the very reason that the chair mentions. The folks at GWIN found that same, I'll just call it tension between the two programs. And that information was presented to the Legislative Interim Committee on Education. It will be, I think, discussed at the next legislative session, certainly at the one after that. And part of the reason is the growing cost of the GWIN Millennium Scholarship. Again, in full disclosure, I worked for the late Governor GWIN. I was there when that scholarship was created and named. But Jose, correct me, about 50-51% of high school graduates are eligible for GGMS, GWIN Millennium Scholarship today. Is that what I read in your report?
Yeah. Jose Quiroga, for the record, that is correct.
Okay. Yeah. So if you think about that eligibility number and you think about the growth of GWIN over time, and it was not securitized, the tobacco money was not, and so every year since about the time the late governor left office, the legislature has subsidized it with general fund appropriation. And so you think about that in this time of tension over budgets, which seems to always be a time of tight budgets, but you think about that need and what that will do to the other scholarship programs that we find so valuable. So I want to signal to you that we ought to be paying attention to that conversation. Tomorrow or today, the agenda is still a blur to me, I'm new, you will receive a presentation about fee waivers, a completely different kind of program, but I would ask that you think about it in a coherent strategy of how we support student progression to and through our institutions. They are held apart for lots of reasons, but I think in the conversations that are coming, we ought be thinking about more coherence in the system of aid and assistance to students, and I think we ought be cognizant of the budget tension. And so the last two things that I would just remind you from what Mr. Quiroga has said, the data points that I hope you will keep. The largest program we have is subsidized by our own students supporting their peers, not by the good people of Nevada and tax dollars. I'm very proud of the students for that fact, and I don't like it as a Nevadan, that that's where we get our money, is to take from one to give to another, that we could have more, in my opinion, monies that come from other appropriations than our own student body. So I would ask you to sit with that number for a bit, that it is the largest. And then the other number that took Jose, the better part of a morning to explain to me, the $450 million of unmet need, it's a plus or minus $30 million, if I recall. That's unmet need. So yes, we have $600 million and change in the system, and $400 million more could be used. So again, I wish to signal to the board, one, I heard you, Mr. Chair, about the efficacy of these programs, and that conversation will continue, and I think is the right conversation for this board to lead on and not be done to as we go forward. So thank you, Jose, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. This is really great information, and I hope we can have that put on our board pack so we can refer to this, because I know as an advocate with the Association of Community College Trustees, we go to D.C. every February, and one of the main things we advocate and lobby for is the Pell and increasing it just to keep up. But one of the things I did want to ask, when I was running back in 2016, I had a meeting with the chancellor at the time, and he was very, very proud. It's not on this report, but I was wondering if you knew the figure of the student debt that our the average student debt at that time, he told me, was $22,000 for our NCHE students. And I wondered, do you have that information? And if you don't, could you get it? I'd like to know what that is.
I do have that not with me, but I do have that information. I could get it back to the board. I believe it has slightly decreased.
Oh, that's even better.
But I'll make sure of that, and I can follow up.
Because I thought 22,000, this was 16, was really a low figure, maybe not to a student that has to pay it back. But, if that's the average, I thought that was pretty reasonable.
And Jose Quiroga, for the record. I do believe that it has decreased. I can get that information back. The way that we have gathered that data is from the Federal College Board, or College Scorecard, and we can get that back to you.
Thank you.
Regent McAdoo.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to say I'm glad to be in the good company of those who have spoken about the efficacy of our scholarships and grants. I really appreciate your report. I believe since I first became a regent, I've never allowed the Silver State Opportunity Grant to come up without me making it very clear. I am a strong advocate for an increase in that particular scholarship, so that those students who indeed have that balance left, that we can assist with that. So I'm looking forward to what's going to happen coming up. Appreciate your report today. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great report. I loved all the information included in it. I have two questions, a softball one first. The cost of attendance, is that like an average or is that like the worst case scenario? Like, is the student, an engineering student taking computer classes and nursing? You know, is it just an average?
Thank you, Jose Quiroga, for the record. That is a category or that is an amount that is made for students as a category. So a student could have, let's say that they're off campus, but they're living with a roommate, their housing costs would be, their actual housing costs would be lower. Their cost of attendance would remain at that higher rate because it is not a personalized amount. It is more by student category. So institutions will do surveys and will get a kind of an average amount for a student in that specific situation.
Okay, thank you. And the other question is, are we working, since there's student loan forgiveness, are we working with those students who stopped out because they couldn't pay their student loans? And with the forgiveness, will that, have we been reaching out to those students to see if they would want to return if, you know, the, or education even, for the forgiveness program?
Jose Quiroga, for the record. Although any specific initiatives would be vary institution by institution, I know that all of our institutions have robust outreach programs to many students, including some that have dropped out in the past. Now, the specific loan forgiveness from the federal government was recently announced, and there's still parts coming out, so I'm not specifically aware of one specifically for that student group, but that is a great idea.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Most of what I have to say has already been said, so I'll just be brief. I completely agree with the sentiment of my colleagues regarding need versus non-need financial aid. This really is an issue of access for our students and of equity, and so increasing the SSOG I would be in full support of. I think that that's very important. And additionally, regarding loans, since that is the highest portion of our financial aid that we see from our students, one of the worst outcomes we have for our students is taking a few classes after getting a loan and then not graduating. And so I had the same question of if we had any kind of tracking or any kind of system in place for our institutions to stay in contact with those students so that perhaps they can complete their degree or certificate or whatever their higher education outcomes, their desires for those outcomes may be, because a loan with no education is a really bad situation, and we know so many Nevadans have that situation right now. So I'm curious to know if any of our institutions do go after any of those students to try to get them back or to help them with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Jose Quiroga, for the record, thank you for that question, and that is really important. As Regent Cavala stated, it is an area of concern for all of our institutions. We want to make sure that our students who, not just those who attend, but especially those who borrow, that they're being successful. And nationwide, it's an interesting problem in that it tends to be students with actually lower amounts of debt that default on their debt, and because it is those students that didn't maybe attended one semester, two semesters, but didn't complete their degree that tend to not have those employment outcomes that we want so that they can repay their loans. What all of our institutions have is that they track their cohort default rate, so they're seeing which students are defaulting over a three-year average, and students actively work to reach out to students to make sure that default rate, you know, fewer students are defaulting over time. So there are definitely programs. There is tracking of how many of our students are defaulting and trying to lower that as much as we can.
Regent McAdoo.
I was going to wait until the audit committee to respond to Acting Chancellor's comments about Nevadans as a whole supporting our students. But I want to give you a heads up that I'm going to highly recommend you stay here for that audit committee report, because Grant Thornton is doing a report there, and in that report, they have generational evidence of why generations give, why they choose to give, who they choose to give to, and for what reason. And I've looked at it so many times because I love that stuff, but it says to me that we are missing out on ways to help Nevadans support higher education financially across the four generations that Matt will be talking about in that report. So I'm encouraging our foundation directors to listen into that, because it's just evidence that there's people out there that have the means to give and want to give. We just have to meet them where they are to enable them to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. Regent Arascata.
Thank you, Chair. Wonderful presentation. I was reviewing these numbers at home. On page 17, the cost of attendance, were you using the registration and fees for the 2022 year, or what? Were you going to project it all the way out to 2025? I was just running the numbers, and I just wanted to make sure that we all had something close to each other, even on page 18. Because just going over the registration fees for universities for undergraduate for this year is going to be $256 per credit. For a 30-credit year, we're looking at $7,680. And I was just trying to do your tuition and fees. You have it at right around $85 for both UNR, UNLV.
Jose Quiroga, for the record, these were 2020-21 fees. They're meant to include all registration fees and other mandatory fees.
Okay.
And these are reported as a whole from the institutions. And for most institutions, this is based on 30 credits. For CSN, it is 26 credits, and that is what they use at their institution when calculating aid.
Okay.
Or financial need, excuse me.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Chair DeBravo.
Hello, Regent Boylan. I'm not DeBravo, but...
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. I keep the names mixed up. Sorry. On this topic, I know I'm not on this committee, but I really have a question that I'm seriously interested in, and I'm sure the taxpayers also would be interested in that. Do we have any sort of numbers on people who are given free education at NSHE, and their how many of them really go through the 4 years of school at least, whether it's the military or Native Americans or anybody else? Is there any study on that? Do we have any such numbers? I really would appreciate if this young man who's doing the presentation, and I'm sorry again, I don't remember your name, sir, but is there anybody else who can get me those numbers or get the board those numbers if they're interested? The board, that is. Thank
Jose,
you, sir. Is there anything?
Jose Quiroga, for the record, I would point Regent Boylan to two reports. One, I believe, will be presented to the board, full board, later this week, on the history of all fee waivers. So we're looking at all fee waivers comprehensively. I believe it is the first time we've done this, at least in many years, and it should look at what Regent Boylan has requested of where, who is receiving that, what are the eligibility requirements. The other report on efficacy is the one that Acting Chancellor Quiroga mentioned on efficacy of statewide, state-funded financial aid programs and how those programs affect measures of student success.
Thank you so much, young man. I appreciate that. And you used the really nice words, fee waivers. I just said, you know, they're getting it free. But I appreciate those words, too. I look forward to that, and I look forward to getting any information that you or anybody else could provide me. I'd really appreciate that. Also, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, there's something I cannot get through to anybody on the phone about something. The sound is terrible, I think, for people who are on the net. It's very low and can hardly... I've got everything at full blast, trust me. And I know it's off topic here, but I just thought someone needs to know that. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, hearing none, this was information only. Thank you, Jose. Appreciate it greatly. We'll go to item number 10, new business. Is there any new business? Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Geddes. comment on what Mr. Regent Boylan said, the fee waiver versus the graduation rate, I think that might be something that we might want to take a look at.
Okay. Any other? All right. Seeing none, we will go to item 11, public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Is there any public comment here in Elko? Seeing none, hearing none, we are adjourned.